With San Vian, which means I am your shadow. I love that song. Hello, everybody, and thanks for joining us tonight. We have a great guest. I'm so excited to talk to him. His name is Jimmy Pettinito, also known as Mr. Haunted. I'll tell you a little bit about him. Well, first of all, he co-wrote a book called Phantom Messages, which I'm currently reading. I'm halfway through. It is a fantastic book. It's a collection of all kinds of communication from either the dead or, time travel incidents. It's a whole bunch of odd communications through email, phones, computers, you name it. Very, very interesting. So Jimmy He began investigating the paranormal with Ed and Lorraine Warren. He's appeared on numerous television shows such as Sightings and Unsolved Mysteries and is the host of the popular radio program The Haunted Chronicles. His website is MrHaunted.com, and he resides in Cheshire, Connecticut, which is just a stone's throw away from me here. So with all that being said, let's bring him on and talk about this. Jimmy, are you with us?
I am.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. Okay, so now this book is really good. Do you remember that old book, Phone Calls from the Dead, that came out way back?
Yeah, I think it was in the 80s, and I actually have that book right on my shelf here, and that's where we got the inspiration for this book.
Yeah, I loved that book. That first book's worth like $100 now. I don't know if you knew that. But
is it?
Yeah, totally.
I'm going shopping.
So anyway, but I am finding this fascinating. Now, these are eyewitness accounts, and there's a bunch of them. But I wanted to ask you, when you've heard these EVPs or maybe you consider them EVPs or just voices on the phone, like an answering machine. Because I remember at the Warrens, when they were playing this voice of a spirit, it was like really gravelly, like, I'm a soldier, like that
type of thing.
Remember that? That freaked me out. But so what did this sound like when you heard these messages?
Well, I'll tell you first about that I'm a soldier one.
Mm.
That was voices from the Enfield poltergeist in England.
Mm-hmm.
So those voices were actually coming from the girls in that house, the ones they recorded.
Oh my God.
And those were so scary. I used to go home terrified after those shows.
No kidding. So wait a minute. So it wasn't a real ghost or a real spirit speaking?
On the Ed and Lorraine tapes? No, that was the actual girl. But the voice would come from her. Like she said it would come from the back of her. Yeah.
Oh, so okay, I understand. I didn't realize that because I'm like, that is very clear,
Yeah.
Wow. And you've had so many encounters with Ed and Lorraine. I mean, you studied under them. I went to their house probably half a dozen times to talk to them and interview them and all that. But, I mean, you really knew them well. And there's a lot of people that, of course, love Ed and Lorraine, and there's a bunch of people that don't like what they did. But, I mean, that's where I take my cue from, what they taught me. And so, I mean, tell us, first of all, like, what are the most interesting investigations you've been on?
I actually have one in particular that is featured in the book. That was my favorite case I've ever been on. I can tell all you about it if you want.
Yeah, please do. I might have read that one already, but go ahead.
It's a long story. Get a cup of coffee. When we first joined the group, we had meetings on Mondays, and they wouldn't immediately send you out on a case. Like, they try to tell you, you know, how to interview and techniques they'd use and stuff like that. So the first, like, we go to some investigations as a group, like sometimes 4 to 8 people. And for the first time, I worked primarily with a guy named Rick, who lives nearby me, and we were friends before this. So Lorraine called us one night and said, "Hey guys, do you want to go on a case tonight? No one else is available." So this is the first one we actually got to go to ourselves. So we're so excited. They said, she said, "Hey, there's a house in Waterbury, Connecticut, and there's a woman that's at home sitting on her front porch, and she will not go back inside until somebody comes." So we're there, you know?
Right.
So we got an hour later, we got there. She was still crying on the steps. She was only 23 years old, and she lived on the second floor of a 3-story house. She lived there with her boyfriend and a 3-year-old son. And her boyfriend worked nights, and it was difficult for her being by herself with her son, especially when some activities started happening. So even on some nights, which we'll explain later, her mom would come over and stay overnight with them to give her some relief. So when we first got there, she said she didn't want to go inside the house. She said, "We'll go with you." And she leads us up the stairs to go to her door, and her door wouldn't open. And the handle actually shakes back and forth, so it wasn't locked. So we had to actually push our shoulder into the door to open it. And when we did, we heard this like big noise inside, and we opened the door, and there's an exercise bike like falling down across the room.
Ooh.
So she goes, "That exercise bike was across the room when when I left." So if that's the truth, like, the exercise bike somehow came over there, wedged itself under the door. So, you know, to lock the door.
Right.
So, she's hysterical, saying the bike was across the room. So Rick and I we set up for an interview in her dining room to get her story. And all we had back then was like a camcorder, a cassette tape recorder, and a regular 35mm camera. And back then, I was the tech expert. I just told you before the show that I'm a tech idiot. But back then, I was the tech expert because I actually had a camcorder, cassette tape recorder, and a 35mm camera. So it was a big deal. So these are some of the things she shared with us. She'd see a shadow figure the different times in the house. Her son told her about a boy named Tommy who would visit him in his room all the time. And he said Tommy was 8 years old. And sometimes he'd come running into his room saying that Tommy beat him up and he would have bruises all over him. I remember one night she went to check on him, and every toy, and this kid had a ton of toys, every toy that he had in his closet and in his toy box was piled on top of him while he was asleep in bed.
Oh, my God.
She said there's no way a kid could pile all these things on top of him. Her boyfriend also witnessed the shadow figure, and she told us the strangest things that happened was when she wasn't home. For example, that's why I call this case the case of the missing muffins. I think it might be labeled in there. She would bake a bunch of muffins, and this kid was a little kid, and she'd put them, after she baked muffins, she'd put them on top of the refrigerator and then push them all the way to the back so the kid wouldn't see them, you know, so he'd want to take them.
Right.
So, and she also did this with cookies and whatever. So one day she asked her boyfriend and the son, she goes, "Hey, have you seen the muffins I just made?" And they said, "No." A week later, while cleaning, she found all the muffins stacked neatly towards the back of her bedroom closet. Now, you know, another time she made chocolate chip cookies, same thing, missing. And she even checked the closet to see if they were in there. And and now she's thinking like a neighbor or the landlord got in and is playing some weird joke on them or something. So some time passes, and she has a couple friends over in the kitchen. And she asked her son to stay in the living room, you know, leave us alone. We're adults in the kitchen. Stay in the living room, watch TV or whatever. And the boy comes in, like, he's trembling and, like, looks confused. And the mom says, "What's the matter?" And he didn't even say anything. He just, like, points his hand into the living room. And he points behind the couch. And there's a stack of chocolate chip cookies in the back of the couch. Which is hard to wrap your head around when you're a kid. Like, what are they doing there? So as we're interviewing her, every once in a while, she'd look in some direction and say, "Didn't you see that? Didn't you see that?" And I was like, "See what?" She goes, "There's a shadow figure right there." And I said, "We don't see anything." And she points into the living room. "Didn't you see that?" It's like, "No." And I said, "Did it go away?" She goes, "No, it's standing right there." So we just, we're at the point where we almost don't believe her. Like, maybe she's just hysterical or something. Or, you know, maybe she's seeing it, we don't, but it's just, didn't seem right that she says it's right there and we can't see anything.
Right.
So we're about to end the interview because we've got a lot of information. And she, now she's like, starts crying. She goes, "There it is. Don't you see it?" She goes, "It just went into the bedroom." So she's pointing to the far left corner in the bedroom. And she goes, "Don't you see this?" And like the bedroom light was off, but there was enough light from the hallway that you could see clearly into the bedroom. And me and Rick look at each other. And about 8 feet away, there it is. Just shadow guy, you know, 5'9", 5'10", and a thin one. And it was a solid shadow, like, outside the wall. And we all see this. So because this is a lesson we could teach people. When you go anywhere to investigate something, take your camera with you. Because it's the first time we ever saw anything like this. And I was without my equipment because I left it behind because I didn't believe her. And I was looking at Rick. I said, "Whoa!" And the thing was kind of like moving back and forth really slow. It's kind of creepy. So I said to Rick, I said, "Should I go get the video camera so I could document this? Or," I said, this is going to just last a few seconds and it's something you want to experience, you know, live while it's there."
Right.
So he says, "Let's go try to touch it." So, We even tried to play with the door and stuff, the shadows. You know, can this be explained? And we couldn't explain it. So I decided not to get the camera, and he wanted to go touch it. So he took a step towards the thing, and as soon as he took a step, it turned to its right, and very slowly it's like seemed like it walked into the wall. Took a step and then I don't know if it disappeared into the wall or went through the wall. So I immediately go around into the hallway to see if it came out the other side, and there was nothing. And they were renting the apartment month to month, so they decided that when the month ended in a couple weeks, they're just going to move out. And they let us. They said, "You know, if you guys want to come here and investigate or try to get evidence, you can come anytime you want." So we returned a few days later, and I noticed that they moved a lot of stuff out of their apartment, but I noticed the boys' sneakers. They left you know those sneakers that light up? I think they're LA Gear.
Yeah.
The little kid sneakers. And she left that behind and this little dresser thing. So I said, "Well, why did you – are you taking those?" And she says, "No." She goes, "Because they creep me out." I said, "Why?" She goes, "Well, they start flashing at different times." And she said, "My mom, one time when she came over to, you know, watch her son, she goes, she saw them walk across the boy's bedroom when she was standing in the hallway by themselves. There was no feet in them."
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
So she said, "I'm not taking them to the new place." So I thought it would be a great idea to leave the camcorder focused on the sneakers to try to catch them blinking or, like, walking, but at least blink or something, you know. So we set up the camera, watched for a while, nothing happened. And then I remembered a lot of this stuff happens when they're not home. So I even said out loud, I said, "Okay, we're going downstairs for a break now." Then you hear us go down the stairs. And about 50 minutes or so, we come back up and nothing's happening. So I was like, So then I replay the tape. And as soon as you hear us go down the stairs, the things start blinking back and forth, like they're talking to each other, you know, the whole time we're gone. And as soon as we came back, they stopped.
Wow.
So I even remember I called Bob, I think it was Bob Stores at the time. There was no internet. And I called them up. I said, how do these speakers work? I said, you know, maybe the battery's running low or vibration. Like, how would they go off by themselves all the time? They said that they can't. So that was a weird phone call from them.
Yeah.
So we don't know. So then I even did the, I started asking Blink once for yes, two for no, and it would answer like that when I asked questions.
Wow.
These sneakers.
Gee.
And see what else happened there. Then, the best part of the story. Do you want to hear more?
Yeah, of course. Okay.
So one night when we left, we wrote up a report of all the incidents of the evening, like a basic general story of what she told us. And then, you know, each hour, what happened, what we did. And I brought it was around Halloween time. So I brought the report home along with the sneakers and I left them on top of the television set. Like back then with a big giant wooden set thing. And it was around Halloween. I had all these 6 foot decorations hanging from the ceiling that shake and say stuff when you clap your hands or something. I had a mat outside the front door that when you step on it says Happy Halloween and screams. So so then my wife was up late at night watching scary movies, and I had this stuff sitting on the TV. She's watching the movies and she spots the sneakers up there, and she didn't know what we just did the night before. So she goes up to the sneakers and sees the report. So she gets back on the couch, settles back, and starts reading the report. And now she's looking up, you know, up to the sneakers, back to the paper, up to the sneakers, going, you know, oh boy, what's this doing here? So she says the sneakers start blinking, and then all the decorations in the house started going off. The mat outside starts screaming Happy Halloween.
Ooh.
And she was home all by herself. So, the next morning when I got back home, the sneakers are on the front porch, and like she's waiting up for me saying, never again, never again, you're not going anywhere ever again. So that's the general story of that missing muffins. That was one of my favorite stories.
Oh my God. I mean, you know, the things that happen are so random and weird. I remember this woman telling me about a haunting in Georgia when she was a little girl, and she said her mother went and got cold cuts, and the mother went out, and someone was running through the house with a ghost, like a sheet around, you know, on their body, and she thought it was her brother playing a prank, but it wasn't. It was no one. It was like a ghost or something. I don't know. And then she found all the cold cuts the mother bought stuffed in a hollow piece of a door that they had. So I mean, the things that happen are so weird.
Yeah,
you couldn't make it up.
A weird thing like that is more creepy than a monster coming out, putting cold cuts in a door.
I know. And like the muffins in the closet. I mean, really? I'm thinking, Jimmy, I mean, I have gotten EVPs on this show. I don't know if you've ever gotten any on your show.
We could do a whole show on the... Sorry.
Go ahead.
I could, if I wanted to go back, I could make a whole show on the EVPs captured on the show. It's amazing.
Right.
As a matter of fact, when I first started the show, the producer wanted me to do a promo for like, you know, every Friday night, listen to this, whatever. And he had to chop it up. You could ask, he wouldn't lie for me. He had to chop it up so much because as I was doing the promo, the EVPs kept coming through as I was talking. So I had to actually piece my promo together to get the EVPs out.
Wow.
They want to communicate.
Yeah, I know. But then, listen, so remember back in the old days, I don't know if you did this, but I would try to get EVPs through, you know, an AM station that was like white noise, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever done that, but I mean, back in the old days, whatever.
Oh, so, that's a good idea.
Yeah. So what do you think about now? Do you know who Gary Galka is?
No.
Okay. He invented the Melmeter. And he invented the SB7 ghost box. Yeah. So he lives in Connecticut too, Jimmy.
Come on.
Yeah, he lives down the street here. He's in Windsor. I know. So I think that's so cool. I went to visit him at his office where he makes these things, and he actually he can talk to his daughter now, the one that died. He can talk to his daughter without any, you know, like he hears her in his head, and he asks her questions, and she answers them that way. But first it was through the ghost box that he would that he created. She would talk to them, and so he recorded a whole bunch of stuff about my mom, like asking my mom questions.
Yeah.
And I couldn't hear what my mother was saying. I could hear noise, but he somehow deciphered what she was saying to my questions. I don't know how he did that, but it's very interesting. But anyway, so what do you think about, like, do you have a ghost box? Have you ever used a ghost box?
Because I was out of the investigation part a lot, I have stuff all over my basement. And I don't know where half of it is, but I have used SP7.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've used that before.
So how did you, I mean, did you get any results from it, do you think?
We did. And and the only thing about that is I know it's an important, all these are important tools to try to communicate, but there's always a part of me that anytime there's voices already in the device you're using, it raises questions like, you know, is that interference? Is that one of the voices going by? Or was that, so it always, like, I always like using just a recorder with nothing or white noise or anything. So there's no question on where did that voice come from?
Right.
You know? But if, for example, there's this abandoned, supposedly haunted, it was a nursing home right near my house in the woods, it's buried in the woods. And I brought Sean Austin and Eric Vitale with me once we went there with, I don't know what theirs is called, but it's a ghost box with the, it's not SP7, but it's one of those ghost boxes. And I've never been in the building before, even though it's in the woods. I have no reason to go there. But I said, hey guys, you want to go investigate in there? So they bought the box, and creepiest thing ever is when the box was saying, it kept saying Bart Simpson.
Ooh.
Like, clearly Bart Simpson. Like, so we're like, that's weird. And we went live on this. It's live on my page somewhere. And so then we go, it's a huge building, you know? So we went to another room, and there's like literally an 8-foot Bart Simpson, somebody spray painted on one of the walls.
Oh.
So that's not random, you know?
No, that's weird.
And then we had one, like, it'll say 1963. And then we go to another room, and 1963 will be sprayed on the wall. And the most embarrassing thing that happened in that same building was when I play a dinosaur game on my phone. Where I catch dinosaurs, and we were there for like an hour and a half. So I said, I got to catch some dinosaurs on the way home, walking on the way home. So I was about 20, 30 feet in back of them playing my game. And then the machine starts going off. They go, Jim, come here quick. It's a dinosaur, dinosaur. I'm like, I didn't know what I'm doing.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, so one thing that that's so interesting. One thing that I did once, I gave a friend of mine an SP7. I didn't keep it for myself, although I'm thinking about getting one now because I tried to do the thing with the AM radio on the white noise stations, but I haven't gotten anything. But I know you got to be patient with it. But anyway, so I gave this SP7 to my friend, and she was asked, and I have this on a recording, and I tried to upload it, but I couldn't. But anyways, do you know who Konstantin Rodova was?
No, but I would like to know.
Okay, so Fredrik Jorgensen, which is who someone you reference in the book, in your book, Fredrik Jorgensen was basically, yeah, he was one of the fathers of EVPs, but so was Konstantin Rodova, okay? So I'm asking for Konstantin. I said, Konstantin, you know, and he had a German accent, Jimmy, right? So yeah. I was like, can Konstantin come forward and say his name? So this takes about 2 minutes or something, and all of a sudden you hear, and I said, say your name, just say your name. And all of a sudden you hear it so clearly. It's like this you know, chaos, like on the radio, and then it beeps, and then it's a clear Rodova German accent, and I'm like, oh my God, it works. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's amazing.
It is. So, I mean, in terms of, like, in your book, now, you guys, remember, this. He has a book out called Phantom Messages. It is a great book, so go check it out. You can probably get it on Amazon. You might be able to get it on MrHaunted.com. I'm not sure. But in the book, you talk about emails. And, you know, even, I'm sorry, I'm all over the place, but, I mean, emails, like, there's this one incident in here where this guy was getting emails in the 80s from someone who had lived 100 years before. Or no. This guy was from the 1700s or 1600s.
Yeah, hundreds of years before.
Yeah, what happened with that? Did you ever find out anything?
That's a good one, because when me and Bill, the co-author, do our like book chats and stuff, that's his story that he tells, and I memorized the other ones. So that's the one he could tell really good. But, yeah, I remember it had to do with a man who lived in a small cottage Duddleston, England. And he this was back before they had no internet. They just had a computer that you could do work on at your home, you know, word processing and stuff. So there's
right.
no internet. There's no connections to anything.
Right.
So this man used to get – and he was borrowing it from – he was a professor or teacher, and he brought it home to work with. And there'd be boxes pop up on his screen – and then he'd like click on them, and this whole message stream would be on his computer screen. He's like, what is this? And this person said, like, my name is whoever from, you know, whatever. And he goes, who are you? And he goes, I'm John or whatever. And he goes, and they get to talking, and it's like, where are you from? And they figure out they're talking from the same address.
Yeah.
So the people lived there like hundreds of years ago. So they try to, the guy from the president was so confused. He's like, what's down the street? Like, he's trying to prove it. Like, what's down the street? And he'd name a certain store or something. And then they come to find out, like, you know, 100 years ago it was there. And mm-hmm. there was also weird stuff. Remember, there was like chalk scrawlings on that wall in the same house. Oh, there's so much more to that story.
Right. So, I mean, but that just tells me that, you know, how the multiverse, right? That we're living, lives in the same, basically, I know there's no time when you go to the afterlife or things like that, but it seems like there is a multiverse, Jimmy, like
yep.
that like, I have another, I mean, in fact, one of my medium friends, that she is the greatest psychic medium there is out there, but anyway, she told me that I actually was living another life where I was married and I had children. I'm not married and I don't have children. But and you know, in the same time as I'm living this life, and it's just so interesting to me. You know?
It sounds so crazy, but it makes sense when you think about it. I mean, even though it seems impossible, but like there's probably 100 versions of our interview going on right now, in these different universes, and they're all different. This is the one we're using right now.
Right. I mean, wow. And I mean, you know, studying the afterlife for God, I've been studying the afterlife for years now, but I mean, I am fascinated by it. Like, tell me any, like, give me some new information about it. I like love to learn about the afterlife, you know, but, have you guys heard from Lorraine Warren at all? Have you tried to, you know, and I know that was a big no-no when she passed away, like, don't try to contact her, but has anyone contacted her?
I haven't tried to contact Lorraine, but it's weird. On a lot of investigations we have, Ed comes out on EVPs in his voice.
Oh, wow.
And he laughs a lot. Like, his laugh, it's like him, you know? It's not like you're trying to stretch it to say, well, maybe it's that. No, it sounds just like him, and he like does a little laugh and stuff. But you were talking about the multiverse thing. And you're familiar with the Mandela effect?
Yeah.
I love that subject.
Yeah.
And that makes the most sense to me on why we have the Mandela effect, is because a different multiverse. Like, we all remember
right.
something, but we remember it different.
Yeah, right, exactly. I mean, there's so many subjects I would love to talk to you about, and I know we don't have a lot of time, but in terms of, like, how, you know, in a lot of these incidents in your book, Phantom Messages, you're talking, like, there's, you know, there's all ways that people are getting messages. Like, the one story about the man that heard his death in a text, or not a text message, on a voicemail that he got. I find that fascinating. Like, you know, the guy, I'm not sure if this was your story or your co-author's story, but he got a message on his phone that was like him, you know.
Couldn't breathe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that was so freaking weird. Don't you think?
Yeah, it's weird. He, there's the one, I'm trying to find the one. Sorry. I'm searching for something. We're talking about the weird communications. The alien ones, or supposed alien ones, those freak me out too. So we have ones from like possible outer space type things of spirits, of just random spirits. We have like loved ones that came back. But the one from the Jack Freeze one, did you read that one yet?
No, I don't think so.
Is this guy, he was only 32 when he had a unexpected heart attack. And I think it was 2011. He died in 2011. It was June. And his obituary described him as a guy like joking around a lot. So it kind of makes sense of what happened. And so everything was quiet after he died for like 5 months. And then the weird emails started. And in November of the same year, best friend, his name was Tim Hart, was confused. We saw a new email in his inbox, and the sender was his good friend Jack, and the subject of the email read, "I am watching." And then the text,
yes, I did see that.
Yeah,
go ahead.
It says, "Did you hear me? I'm at your house. Clean your effing attic."
Yeah.
And the guy remembered that Tim, the last time Jack visited, they were hanging out in his attic, and he was remarking on, you know, what a mess it was. So then this guy, Jack Freeze, his cousin Jimmy, also received a strange email the same month. And the subject heading read, "Hey, Jim." And so the text read, "How are you doing? I knew you were going to break your ankle. I tried to warn you. You got to be careful." And there was another guy, a friend of theirs, Rock. They said, "Tell Rock, hi for me." His email wouldn't work. So this guy was apparently sending out emails to people, and some of them worked, some of them didn't.
Wow.
And then you're thinking, you know, sometimes you could set up an email to be sent in a month, you know, a month ahead of time.
Yeah.
Or something like that. So that's like a possibility. But then again, how could you predict that your friend's going to break his ankle months ahead of time?
Exactly. Yeah.
And so, like, you don't know, did he discover a way to – some people seem to discover a way to communicate with people and some don't.
Right. I know. That's what is so confusing to me, Jimmy, is, like, what makes some people be able to, you know, manifest things or do things like emails or phone calls, and then others can't. I mean, I don't understand that, you know. Maybe they don't want to.
Well,
right?
I'm almost wondering if it's the person receiving the message that is more, for some reason, open to receiving the messages. Like maybe right now, somebody, like maybe your favorite aunt died or something, and it's like, "Oh my God, I wish she'd communicate with me." For some reason, it just doesn't click. And then with somebody else, they're getting tons of messages from their uncle they couldn't stand. They just don't know the chemistry of it or how it works.
Right, exactly. I know. We're only at the tip of the iceberg with this whole supernatural paranormal world, you know.
I'm thinking in our lifetime we're gonna have some kind of device that you just ask a question and it answers right away, and it's,
well, I wish.
Yeah.
That would be excellent. I mean, I think the other thing is, I think that there's things that you know, if you want to call them the dead, I know they're not dead, but the ones on the other side, there's things they can't tell us. You know what I mean? You know, like my good medium friend said, if everyone knew how great the afterlife was, there'd be a lot of people committing suicide. And the fact is, we're here for a reason. We're here to learn things and all the other stuff that we're here for. So it's just, it's fascinating to me, you know. Now, I know you've gone on so many investigations. So, I mean, what would you say about, like, you know, Lorraine was, like, really, at the end of her life, she was still doing things. Like what was that show she was on, Paranormal State or something?
Yeah.
So she was still doing things like that. I remember the first time I went to the Warren's house, and I could not friggin' sleep without all the lights on. And I was scared to death. I'm like, oh, my God. So I said to her, you know, like, she said, you can't, like, if you have a chink in your armor, that's how she put it, then you might get haunted, or you might be haunted, or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, but if you're too good, then you would also be targeted. You know
right.
what I mean? So I was like,
Jimmy, you're screwed either way.
Yeah, right, exactly. So I was like trying to balance myself. Like, well, I don't want to be too good.
just like when somebody has a demonic type haunting, like it's say, okay, now you reached out for help. Like they're supposed to have terrible things happen to them, and when they reach out for help finally. Like, I remember they always told people, okay, now that you reached out for help, it's either going to go away to act like it's gone so you don't ask for help anymore, or it's going to get way worse. There's no in between.
Yeah. Right. That's what I mean. It's like, wow, you know? I mean, you know, just going into the Warren's house into their museum, I mean, the stories, like the story about the exorcism of Maurice Serial, that really sticks with me, you know.
That's the best footage I've ever seen. These was before, you know, before all these apps and Photoshop and all that.
Exactly. Me too.
For people that aren't familiar with it, I think there's some clips on YouTube of Maurice Serial exorcism, but you can actually see scratches appearing on his body as they're doing the exorcism. His eye, I think he doesn't blink for like 3 or 4 minutes straight. He doesn't blink.
Right.
And then he starts crying during the exorcism. He's not, his face, and as you can see, his face changing, right? His nose gets wider. His eyes change. His head changes. And he's like, tears are coming down his face during the exorcism. And when they hit his white t-shirt, it turns to red, which looks like blood.
Right. It is the freakiest freaking film ever. You know, and I just remember being so friggin' scared of everything, you know, even that statue, that devil statue in the woods.
Yeah.
With the old man walking around, and I'll never forget the cardinal on his robe.
I'd love to know how they got that statue out of there.
I know. Oh, my God. Woo! I wouldn't want to do that, but... So what do you think now? Tony Sfera is their son-in-law, of course, if you guys don't know. And he's continued to do videos on YouTube. He's got a channel, basically, I think it's Ed and Lorraine Warren on YouTube. But he continues to do stories and everything like that. So what do you think about what he's doing now, like carrying it on?
I think it's really great that somebody's carrying it on because – I have hundreds of DVDs and VHS of all the cases I've been on, and even audio cassettes. I have items from not, you know, it's like on a very much smaller scale, but I have all my stuff just like they did because I fashioned what I did after them because that's all we knew at the time. So I have my own little items that came from haunted homes and all this stuff. And it's like, I wish one of my kids would, you know, have an interest in it. So they would, I would know it's going somewhere and they would be cared for.
Right.
So I think they'd be happy that somebody's taking care of their stuff because I hope somebody takes care of mine.
Right. Well, I mean, someone might appear in your life, Jimmy, that will do that, you know,
yeah.
Who knows? I mean, but I mean, so yeah, I mean, I watch his new videos occasionally, but you know, it's just the whole, you know, Ed and Lorraine Warren, what I appreciate what they did was that they were so diligent about finding out about the family. Now, you know, if there was drug addiction, if there was mental illness, but you don't really see that happening in these new shows. You don't see, like, the investigators, like, I'll give you an example. There's a show out called Paranormal Nightmare, and I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's three brothers that go around investigating. But I swear, and I'm not cracking on them because I kind of like them, but they go into these houses, and Jimmy, it seems like these people are, like, out of their minds that they're investigating for, like that.
I gotta watch this now.
Yeah, I mean, look at one Paranormal Nightmare. They're in Ohio, and I mean, they don't go in and do any investigating on what is going on in the house. You know what I mean? But I can, like, I'm not gonna say I know for a fact, but it looks like they're dealing with people that are on drugs for one thing. Second thing, that there's a mental illness there. I don't know. You tell me what you think. I'd be interested to hear what you think, you know.
Well, only because we were lucky. We had in the core group that we used to investigate with, we had a doctor, a nurse, a psychotherapist. So mm-hmm. we had a police officer. So we had, like, all the kind of angles covered as far as checking for, physical and mental issues.
See, that was good. That's what every investigative team should have, I think, you know?
If you can get them, yeah, it's good to have.
Yeah, definitely. So you're not, I take it you're not doing any investigations lately because of the whole COVID thing probably, but are you or?
We've gone on a couple. There's, I think it's private for now, but it'll be public in a while, but we're going to Pennsylvania for an exorcism at the end of the month.
Oh, wow.
Of a home and the family. And then it's funny. We went to one guy we're working with bought a house in Trumbull, Connecticut.
Yeah.
And it's an old historic home. And he had some really weird things happening. So remodeling it, like gutting mm-hmm. it and making it all new again. And he invited us to come check it out, see if we can find anything. Because one guy walks off the job as he saw something. They're hearing voices, and he's trying to get some answers. He's not scared. He just wants some answers. So we went there, and there was no power to the house. So we're there at night, and, like, you know, four or five of us are in the basement with our – and we're getting – actually, I got one EVP that we verified that was the original owner's son, same, while we're there. But the thing was, we were down there with our flashlights, and, you know, it's like when you have equipment, everything's in cases and stuff, and you're carrying around with the handles. So we were down there for, you know, a good hour and a half, and when we came back out to take a break, there's a police officer in the middle of the street, one in the driveway, one blocking my car in. He said there must have got calls from the neighbors that there's people walking around with flashlights in this house. So we got busted. So then... luckily the owner was with us and explained to the there was like four or five cops there, and they explained to us what we're doing, and every one of them had a story. They loved it.
Right Wow.
They were making friends with us on Facebook.
That's excellent. So what about this exorcism? I mean, what's happening with the guy, or is it a guy or a girl?
It's a whole family. I think it's more the house.
Yeah. Need exorcism?
Well, I have some stuff I got to go over. I don't know. I don't have all the details handy for that one.
Okay.
But I have woman in Europe I could tell you a few details about, so you know more about. That's someone we're trying to get to, but because of this whole thing, it's hard to do. It's going to be it's probably going to be part of the next Hostage to the Devil series.
Oh, let's talk about that. I'm sorry, Jimmy. I forgot to mention that.
Now, it doesn't matter. I'll talk about anything.
Okay. So the Hostage to the Devil, if anyone has – this is on Netflix. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's still on Netflix until, I think, February or something.
Okay. So you guys, check out Hostage to the Devil. Jimmy's in that documentary or whatever you want to call it. And that's about – that's with Father Malachi?
Right, Malachi Martin. It's hard because he was such an amazing person that they could have made like 5 documentaries on different aspects of his life, but they tried to exorcism part. So they weave in exorcism stories that people that worked with him in it. They put everything into the what I'm trying to say is it focuses on the exorcism part,
right?
But anyway, right. It's hard to find on Netflix too because it's not on the main. You got to actually type in "Hostage to the Devil" to find it.
Mhm.
They have it right at the bottom.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, if someone puts it in the search, they should be able to find it. You know.
Yeah. You got to search for it.
Yeah, I mean, that was excellent. I watched that some time ago. That was excellent. But so you're, you know, I mean, obviously you believe after some research and researching a person and looking at all the possibilities that some people actually can be possessed by bad entities.
You know what? It's crazy. Even I think about it today. I think it's crazy to believe that, but it happens. It happens. Like you said, even if it's we're in some kind of like the Truman Show and people are setting us up with stuff, like I can't explain it. But yeah, I witnessed a lot of stuff that I can't explain. Okay, what was your question? I babbled.
No, that's okay. I was just saying. So you do believe that some people can be taken over by bad entities?
I do.
Yeah.
If I didn't witness it myself, I totally understand if somebody says that's crazy talk. You know, I get it. But after you see it happen in front of your face, like, scary.
Yeah. What would you say, is there any common denominator between these people that are supposedly possessed? I mean, is there something that they did or, you know, what is there a common denominator, do you think?
Well, I remember, I think it was the Catholic Church did a study on people that had exorcisms, and they couldn't find a common denominator as far as men, women, age, or anything like that. In the olden days, it was always believed you had to invite it in somehow. That's a lot of people believe you have to invite it in. It's not like you just become possessed by, you know, communicating with the dead or doing rituals or, you know, inviting it in somehow. And in our experiences, I mean, there's a 4-year-old girl that's in the end of the film there that the family wants to get help for. And this girl is speaking perfect Latin, doing Latin prayers. Did you see that part? She was speaking,
yes.
She was doing Magnificat. They had her in the front pew of the church, and you could see her. She starts talking, she starts saying the Latin prayer, and her parents say, she doesn't know Latin. You know? And you could see the priests craning their heads. The witnesses are like watching, are like, what? And then the priest says, what are you doing? And she's like, I'm just saying a prayer. And she's like, what, am I not doing it right? And for like a little 4-year-old kid to say that, it's not her. It just wasn't her. You know?
Right. That was freaky. Oh my God. That was.
And then
go ahead.
The biggest question after the film that people were asking was, what happened to the little girl? Because we didn't have any, conclusion, you know, that we didn't know what happened to her afterwards. Since the movie came out, I people contacted us that worked with her towards the end, and she's alive and well and free of everything.
Oh, good. Yeah, that was so freaky, man. Jeez, you know, I mean, obviously, it's no picnic to be possessed. I don't mean to laugh about it, but I mean, geez, you know. But I mean, like the Warren's case with the boy that this was in Connecticut. Remember? I mean, I'm sure you know this case where was one of the conjurings to do with this, where they lived in the old funeral home and the kid was sick.
Yes. That was in Southington. Haunting of Connecticut story.
Yeah. I mean, that was freaky. You know what I mean?
That was right before my time.
Okay.
I just missed that one.
Yeah, I hate that Hollywood made Annabelle like a Chucky doll. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, like, I think a Raggedy Ann doll in that case is way more scary than a doll that looks like, you know, Chucky. you know.
It's creepy. I hate when they stick to the story, because sometimes the story is good enough. Like the Haunting of Connecticut story, the only thing that they really stuck to was the family moved from New York to Connecticut to be closer to the hospital because their son had cancer, and it was the hospital was right down the street from them.
Right.
And that was an old funeral home. And the only thing the woman told me, I said, you know, how close was it? She was one of the only things that they stuck to was, and she was actually mopping the floor in the kitchen and cleaning the floor when they first moved in, and like red was coming up from the floor, like blood kept coming up. It looked like blood, whatever. But they didn't even know it was a funeral home until later, you know. So I hate when it ruins your credibility when you it's like none of this stuff happened. I'm like, why not just stick to the story? It's good enough.
I know, it is. I know. That's what I mean about Hollywood. You know, they got to freaking, do everything overboard. And the true story is, like you said, scary enough, really.
Like, did you ever have any of the Amityville people on?
No. Oh, wait a minute. No, I didn't. I was going to have what's her name on. Who's from the Amityville that is doing interviews?
Well, Chris Lutz is he was one of the sons there.
Okay, no, I didn't have him on. No,
I've had him on, and he said so many people make fun of it, saying they just made up the story over a drink to make money, or whatever. He goes, no, I lived in the house, and he hasn't made a dollar on this yet at all. And he said, yeah, the house was crazy haunted, but it was nothing in the movie matched what happened. You know, they just used the name. It was pretty much just the Hollywood, like you said.
Wow. I didn't know that. I mean, I had heard that people were calling it fake, but I didn't know, what actually happened,
Not everything was made up, but most of it,
Mm-hmm. How about The Fly? Was that made up?
That was real. That was real.
Okay, I figured.
Yeah.
Can't go wrong with a swarm of flies, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was based on the story, but this added so much stuff in that.
I hear you. Yeah. I mean, I haven't, but there was the other one. What was it? Andrea Perone? Did you have her on?
Yes. It was the worst that she's from the Conjuring House in Rhode Island. They made the Conjuring series, the Conjuring movie up. But I had her on. It was terrible because I had her scheduled for 2 months ahead of time. And I had her on a Friday, and her sister died on that Tuesday.
Oh, yeah.
So I mentioned, I said, Andrea, please don't think. And so we'll reschedule you. Don't worry about it. She's no, I want to come on. So it was terrible. But she started like breaking down after like 10, 15 minutes,
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, shoot. Jeez. I know you've interviewed some amazing guests on your show, and it remains, you can still listen to the archives, right?
Yeah. The thing is, they have about the last 30 shows on the archives on Paramania Radio, and you can listen to the last 30 or something. I think I'm on episode 278, so I have them all on a hard drive. I'll eventually put them on YouTube or something one day when I figure out how to do that.
Yeah, it's not easy, but it can be done. I would hire somebody to do it for me.
Definitely.
But wow, you did a lot of shows.
And my favorite shows are, you can get like a big name, like from a TV show or a movie or something, or a famous haunting. I love the story. That's why I have like some ghost story call-in shows, because like the regular person that never gets a platform to tell their story have the best stories ever. And it's like, you get somebody like famous on whatever. It's like the same story you've heard, for years.
Yeah.
Like I love getting the people that never had the opportunity to tell their story. Those are usually the best ones.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
Everybody has a story.
Yeah, totally. I mean, usually, when I talk to people, I'm like, have you ever been haunted? Have you ever seen a ghost? I mean, most people look at me like I'm nuts, but some people come up with stuff, and it's like, wow,
You know what's funny? Especially at work, like people, you know how people think you're weird all year long, except on Halloween, they all want to talk to you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like you talk to people, they go, I don't really believe in the paranormal, but I had one story when I was 9 years old. They all have a story. Everybody has one.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I know. Now, the only story I really have is when I was at Lizzie Borden's house, I saw the black figure. We are having a, you call it a seance, and there was a black figure, and all, like, so we're sitting at this long table where the parents were laid out when they were killed, by the way.
Yeah.
And we, all of us on one side of the table, there was probably like nine of us on one side of the table, all of us stood up because we felt a cat or something going, you know, touching our legs. And we all stood up, and they're like, and there was no cat, you know what I mean? And then we saw the black figure moving in the corner. And I was like, oh, my God. And that was like, I have to say, that was the only, well, as far as I know, that was the only real eyewitness thing that I was privy to, you know? So, I mean, that was weird, you know? Lizzie, she has that house, the lady who owns it, she has that house blessed all the time. So I don't know. I think maybe the spirits are coming in because so many people are there to experience spirit.
So much attention.
So the attention, right? It's like, you know, Jimmy, don't you think that when we, you know, it's almost like we're manifesting spirit
right,
where
right.
we expect it to be. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I
you're
don't,
making,
I don't know
making how, it happen. I think it's weird.
Yeah.
I understand. But you know when somebody has a popular haunted house, like these ones that people go on tours of? And it's like you go there to pay money to experience something.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if you really have the capability of getting the spirits out and giving them peace, why don't they do that? I understand you want to make money, but it's like, why don't you, like, help them? If you
I know. I know, because I think, you know, I don't know if you're of the same mindset, but I think that if you encounter a spirit that is in any given place, that it's kind of your duty to make, you know, to make sure if they want to go on that you help them along.
Right. It should be
and
a tourist attraction. But
right.
You know, when I was 25, I probably thought differently, but now it's like, you know, if you really have the capability of helping them, why don't you?
Right, exactly. And I don't understand that. That's like, that seems to be a thing with these new, you know, there's so many clowns out there investigating. We know that. But, I mean, they never, like, think to, you know, help someone go, you know, to the light or whatever you want to call it. And that's, like, to me, that's wrong, you know. It's like if you're gonna bother to be there and investigate and try to capture evidence, then you should be willing to help them move along if you can, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah. So anyways, okay, so our hour is up. Jimmy can only join us for an hour tonight. He's got prior commitments, but I so much appreciate you coming on. I love our conversation.
Thank you. I love coming another time. It's just like I get up at 1 a.m. for work, so it's hard for me.
Oh,
but,
darn it.
Hey, can I tell people if they want to buy the book from...
Of course, yeah.
Personally, that we could get it signed for them, extra prizes. If
yeah,
they go to
halloftheparanormal.com,
well, we could actually personalize it out and put some treats in there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so say that again. Hall, what did you say?
Halloftheparanormal.com.
Halloftheparanormal.com. Okay.
Right. Bill Hall made the website, so he put his name in there. Hall of
okay.
the Paranormal.
Right, okay. Halloftheparanormal.com, and you can get the book signed and also get a bunch of free cool stuff.
Oh, treats,
yeah. Yeah, so that's excellent. And I really hope to have you on again. I would love to talk to you about so many different things. I mean, like I said, I think that we grew up at the same time and we are kind of going through the same, you know, learning process. And, you know, please keep in touch and hopefully people will visit you at MrHaunted.com. And also listen to the archives of your fantastic shows on Paramania Radio. So you guys check that out, Haunted Chronicles and all that. And thank you so very much, Jimmy, for being on. And we'll talk again soon, I hope.
Thank you. Thank you, listeners. Good night.
Okay. Good night, Jimmy. Okay, so you guys, I know that like there's hardly anyone here right now, but I was going to continue the show if anyone was here and wanted a reading. So I'm going to play a song, and if you want a reading, let me know in chat or call in or something like that, and I'll give you a few minutes to do that, and then we'll go from there. So I'll play a song, and then we can go from there. Okay, thanks you guys for being here.
This phenomenal gold disc is an amazing new breakthrough. This unique disc, Auric Illumination, is used for raising awareness and returning to spiritual order, enabling cells to transform into a higher level, seeing through the illusions of your life and discerning the truth of situations and people, cleansing traumatic experiences, increasing life energy, clarity of mind. It activates creativity, deep inner peace, imagination, intention, and intuition, liberates feelings of guilt, cleanses the cells from electromagnetic radiation, increases your power of self-expression, awakening any living thing to return to oneness, our true nature, and reconnecting you with the energies of the spiritual world. The Auric Illumination Disc affects your entire energy field in the most beneficial and incredible manner. Dr. Gary Lesneski, NRT. www.auricillumination.com 1-860-830-9069. Begin your higher spiritual journey today.
Wow, there's a family of raccoons out here right now because I put some walnuts out there and they're freaking chomping down. So cute. Okay, anyway, thanks you guys for being here, and I'll see you next show, which I think I have Cindy Plume, and we'll figure it out. But thanks for being here, you guys, and take it easy.